Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd just like to start off with a little bit of good news. You may have heard that our unemployment rate is the lowest it's been in 11 years.
Excellent.
That means a lot of people are working. It also has created somewhat of a challenge, and maybe it's a good challenge, and that is in talking to some business folks yesterday, they're having a challenge finding labor, and particularly skilled labor in the skilled professions. And so one of the things that we've been working on the last couple of years, and particularly with some of the local school districts, is getting the trades back into many of these schools. And there are some organizations that are willing to help, outside organizations, the construction trades, who are willing to help because they need people. And the challenge has been, unfortunately, is that and I'll just say this broadly, the bureaucracy does not understand the urgency of getting things done. And sometimes they go through steps that are really unnecessary, and they're not recognizing that every day, every month, every year that you delay, you're missing a cadre of young people who could be going into these professions, making very good money. And in a lot of cases, that's our entrepreneurial class, those individuals who, you know, develop the trades and things of that nature. If anybody has gotten their air conditioning fixed, usually on the hottest day of the year, you know that that individual comes out, makes pretty good money to do that. And so we'll continue to work. I have a call to one of the superintendents this afternoon to basically say to the person, you know, you all need a sense of urgency here because there are young people who could use these skills and an opportunity to make a very good living when they come out of school. I also want to just say that we're going to be, the comptroller is going to make a motion in a few minutes. I'll have more to say, but, you know, thank Executive Secretary Sheila McDonald for her service to the Board of Public Works, but more so to the state of Maryland. We're going to miss your professionalism and also your historic knowledge of what has taken place around here. So I want to just say thank you, and there'll be more to come. No, I should say she's not leaving today. Okay?
No.
And sorry to put you through that.
To you as you chair the board, and I appreciate that very much because that opportunity might not happen again for the next 2 meetings. So I appreciate hearing from you because, again, with the history, I have always enjoyed working with you, Lieutenant Governor, Secretary of General Services, and seeing people go to new things. So it's been fabulous, and thank you for pointing this out now. But I do have 2 more meetings. I will be here through December 31st.
Madam Treasurer.
No, I just wanted to, we look forward to seeing you in the same place very soon. But I've probably been around here longer than anyone except Bruce Berriano. I don't remember. I can't imagine the Board of Public Works without Sheila in one of the seats here. And I think you have been a terrific guide to people out here, which I'm sure standing back, everyone appreciates, even though they like to think they do everything right the first time, and why are you pointing out some issues? But not only that, but a mentor to a great number of people and a role model to a great number of people. And we'll say more about this later, but thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, and good morning, everyone. And yes, it is very rare to ever have a standing ovation in the Board of Public Works.
It is
well deserved. 30 years of state service. Over the last 10 years, you have served as the Executive Secretary to the Board of Public Works. In your current role, you've served alongside four governors, two comptrollers, two treasurers, and this board, and indeed our state, has benefited from the intellect and the level-headedness, the knowledge and command of Maryland's procurement laws, and your selfless devotion to public service. You'll be a hard act to follow, but I'm confident after a rigorous interview and vetting process that our respective staffs have conducted over the last month, we have found a worthy successor to Sheila. And trying to open up the envelope here. I may be a little biased, but
just a touch.
I know he's the right person for the job. Sitting right here, John Gontram. John is no stranger to us in state government. Over the course of a young but distinguished career, he's earned the respect and admiration of elected officials from both sides of the aisle, public servants who work with him on a daily basis. Over the last 4 years, he served as assistant comptroller and my Board of Public Works liaison, assuming one of the most challenging portfolios in the agency. I know that my colleagues would agree that John has developed an expertise in the complex world of procurement and possesses a sharp legal mind that has made him so invaluable in my team and an asset to our state during some critical issues that have come before us. Equally as important, he believes very strongly in this board's authority and the important role that this body plays in state government. On a personal note, John, you and I have worked together since 2011. Through hard work and merit, John climbed the ranks from a community liaison to chief legislative officer and now assistant comptroller. He's a man of few words, never seeks the spotlight or credit. So I assume that he's really enjoying this right now. But I would be remiss if I didn't take a moment to express my sincere gratitude to him for his years of service in my agency. He's an exemplary public servant who wants to assume this position for all the right reasons, and I know he will serve this board and the state of Maryland with distinction for many years after the Lieutenant Governor and the Treasurer and I and Governor Hogan, who is very supportive of John, may be moving on to all sorts of other future interesting challenges. John Gontram is going to be here, and it's a good bridge of stability, certainty, level-headedness that I mentioned with Sheila. We happen to be impulsive people often in politics. John and Sheila aren't, and the state benefits from that continuity of the thread of the Board of Public Works. So I would like to, based upon the recommendations of the Selection Committee, Lieutenant Governor and Madam Treasurer, I would like to move that the Board at this time approve the appointment of John T. Gontram to be Executive Secretary of the Board of Public Works to succeed Secretary McDonald.
Second.
I would like to second that and add my thanks, John, for all you've done and all you will do. Among other things, having been a good leader in the very difficult issue that we went through the past several months about the five gentlemen who were, as they say, erroneously convicted. I've seen your work, and it's terrific. And I know that Sheila has had a strong hand in guiding and in mentoring. And I think that it's a very exciting opportunity to combine continuity of membership and guidance with a view towards the future and what we call generational change. And And I think the people of the state of Maryland, not to mention the folks from the public service sitting in front of you, will learn what we have learned, which is John is A, a great person to work with, B, a fine man, and C, a very determined individual who believes in what he believes in and will let people know that. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, I think John will do a great job. He was your representative on the Procurement Reform Commission and was very active, and I think we'll have a lot to discuss as we implement a lot of the recommendations and move forward. And I look forward to continuing to work with John. I think he'll be a nice, steady influence here at the board. You can't lean toward the comptroller, though, despite that background. You can act as if you don't know who he is anymore. But I look forward to it. I think it's a wonderful selection, and good luck to you. Good fortunes to you. And, of course, Sheila, good luck to you.
We'll deal with her later.
Yeah, there's much more time.
And John and his wife, Emily, just had their second child last week.
Yes.
This week. How old is she?
Last week. A week ago?
So that's the question is, what do you do next Wednesday?
So thank you. Did we take the vote? Is everything...
we're all in favor?
There you go.
Okay.
Thank
you.
All right. Before we get to the Secretary's agenda, I want to recognize seven students from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, who have been working on significant projects for the Maryland Department of Information Technology through our Maryland Technology Internship Program. I want to congratulate each one of them on the work that they've done, the hard work and dedication working with our department on critical projects that help the state run more effectively and efficiently. These interns work on projects that range from cybersecurity assessment to developing user-friendly dashboards, which help citizens better understand the data that is made available from state government. And they range from PhD students from undergraduates to PhD students, and the state is very grateful to have them working with us. So I'd like to wish them all the best in their future endeavors. I hope they will consider coming to work for the state, at least in the initial positions, and or other state agencies, either through Department of Information Technology or one of our other agencies. And I'm going to turn it over to Secretary Leahy, who will introduce his interns.
Thank you, Governor. We at DeWitt are very proud of these interns. They've done amazing work, and it's very encouraging to me, as you've said, to see young people willing to take on public service and to, as part of their education, give back. So without further ado, Dereya Benlako is a Master's of Professional Studies in Cybersecurity. Vinak Patel is working on his Master's in Information Systems. Saeed Damadi is working on his PhD.
Yes, maybe they should stand up when you call their names.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. No, I should have.
Is in signal processing. Latifa DMO is working on her master's in cybersecurity. Pranshu Raghav is working on his master's in cybersecurity. Nathan Tonicelli is working on his master's in information systems. Patrick Ekinga is working on his master's in engineering management. And we also have representatives from the internship program at UMBC, the director, Christine Rutzen, and the assistant director, Annie Weinschenk, with us today.
Thank you. Have governor citations for each of you, and I think at this point we can give them to you. I know we can't line up for a picture with so many folks.
We could.
I guess somewhere.
Go ahead, everybody.
Thank you. here and a couple of you get right next to the door. Pull those things in that way. Don't have them upside down.
I guess you can just like put these chairs up too, real quick.
Is that good? Treasure cop, come on over here.
This is the guy.
Thank you all. At least your first job.
Internship
program.
And he's looking bad now. He's looking at you.
Bring juniors and senior under to work in our procurement shop to learn.
Well, I was just saying earlier, I'm on the board of visitors for the College of Computers, Mathematics, and Natural Science at College Park. And one of the major goals is to connect students, undergraduate and graduate, with the community, with opportunities, so that the economy grows and they have the opportunities that they need. So this is a terrific example.
Nelson may remember when a long time ago when I was at General Services, we had an internship program for procurement officers where we brought in undergraduates to learn about the area of procurement and hopefully come into that area. I think all of them went into companies with doing logistics, but we were trying to bring in new blood and bring in people interested in that. Okay, with that said, Secretary's agenda.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Thank you for your kind words already. And just want to say, when I concur with the Comptroller, when he called Mr. Gontram a man of few words, except when he wants those exonerees paid. And the Treasurer brought that up. So both of those things I agree with. We have 21 items on the Secretary's agenda this morning. There are no reports of emergency procurements. The stadium is withdrawing item 18. They're here for their other items, and we are prepared for questions you may have.
Okay. I was going to mention 17, and I guess 18 went with
what is the Baltimore City Schools? They are asking for the award, approval to award the A&E contract for Montebello Elementary School. They're just not prepared at this time to go forward with the construction contract.
Okay. Very good. Again, this is one of the construction programs that is going in Baltimore, the billion-dollar school construction program. I believe it's up to $1.2 billion now. And it's probably due to the equipment charges being put in. And also, as I mentioned before, with regard to our unemployment rate, we're hearing more entities come back saying that their wages are going up. And so it's a good problem for the workers. It's a challenge for some of us in state business. But this is a very good program. I believe all of us have had an opportunity to go to some of these new schools that are going in Baltimore City. 27 schools at this point that are online or coming online that they plan to have completed. And this is one more school that is in the design phase and looking to go to construction. So I just wanted to point that out. It's a very good program, an opportunity for wonderful learning environments for kids, and that we're going to some of the oldest schools in the state. And
yes, item one.
Item one is the Department of Aging. And I know you, okay, so probably please come up and introduce yourself for the record. This is a grant to Talbot County for the Senior Center.
Good morning. I'm Karen Lasser. I'm Deputy Secretary for the Department of Aging.
And I believe Robbie Gill from Chesapeake
wanted
to come up
here. You want to come up? Yeah. Come on up.
Yeah. Representing the grantee in this.
Thank you. Lieutenant Governor, Madam Treasurer, just very briefly, we're asked to approve a $800,000 grant in general obligation bond proceeds to the St. Michael's Family YMCA and Senior Center. I had the honor of attending their ribbon cutting this past June, and this 24,000-square-foot shared-use facility includes well-being programs and classes along with activities for summer camps, and most importantly and interestingly to me, intergenerational programs between young people and seniors in a way that will benefit actually both both the older folks and the younger folks. And I would like to thank the secretary, but also salute Robbie Gill, the CEO of the YMCA of the Chesapeake, and also Kerry Foxwell. Kerry, if you could stand for your leadership and development work and planned giving and this, that, and the other thing. Kerry Foxwell is no Robbie relations. Gill's secret weapon. Thank you for your leadership, Robbie, and the team that you have, the staff, the benefactors, and volunteers. I know that you're raising huge amounts of private sector money to not just match, but much more than we're partnering with you at the state level on, but I think this new facility is a reality that's going to be seen all over the state because we have an aging population, and we're going to recruit a lot of young people to come to Maryland, and we're going to connect everybody so that we don't have isolation. And I'm very supportive of this item, Lieutenant Governor and Governor Hogan, to you both for supporting this. And Madam Treasurer, if you haven't been down there, it's a great place to visit.
It's a unique model in that it's not only a live senior center, but it's on school property. So he's an accessible location for not only our older adult population. It's a hub, community hub, but also it gives kids the ability to walk there right after school, pulling those folks together. And so from, you know, that area from Oak Creek Bridge all the way out to Tilden, there's about 4,000 people that live in that area. The Y Senior Center opened on June the 10th. We've seen almost 36,000 visits, which is about 750 people a day, which really equates to about half of the population visiting the YMCA and the Senior Center every week. So it's everything we could have ever hoped it would be. Thank you to the Department of Aging for supporting this unique model, as well as the Board of Public Works. And we're excited to continue this, as you mentioned, Mr. Comptroller, in other communities where there's gaps for senior programming in Caroline County and Queen Anne's County, and needs for youth as well. That intergenerational model is just amazing to see. So love, when you're on the shore, love to show you around. It'd be great.
You'll hear from us. We actually talked about doing something like this in Bethesda near the high school 25 years ago and didn't do it. And I think your model, I mean, that's terrific. It's absolutely delicious.
Thank you for working with the Y. We're hearing that model more and more. I know in Dorchester County, they're building Delmarva. I forgot the first of it. Santos group down there is building a intergenerational facility. It's not linked to a school, which that's a very good way to do it because of the easy access for young people to get to the facility. So that's good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And the people of Talbot County and around, I was looking before you said anything, Comptroller. It's an unusual breakdown of contributions. $5 million from contributions and the community,
right,
compared to about $1.5 million from the state and the people around, plus the county.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's been a project that's been a labor of love for that community, and wanted to see. For many of the people living in St. Michael's, don't have Filmon and out on the peninsula, don't have the capacity and access to get to Easton, and so to have that right there where everyone can have access and opportunity has been something the whole community has fought and worked hard and contributed to. So you got the part that you guys have played has been instrumental, and without your support, it wouldn't happen.
Thank you. Yeah, that is a very good point of how much this private donations. So, again, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Any additional questions on the Secretary's agenda?
I would just like to note Department of Housing and Community Development. There are just a couple projects here, but every meeting they bring us projects and they talk about energy saving and the impact on the environment and sustainability. And I just think it's very helpful for everyone in the room to know that that is part of our Maryland construction program now.
Uh-huh.
And to see it laid out like that, we can always do better, but to see it laid out like that, I think is very helpful. I was looking at 12, but it's more than just 12.
Yeah. Good. So no other questions?
We have approval. Motion? To move approval.
Okay.
Thank you.
Second. Okay. We're all in favor. Department of Natural Resources. Well, I guess give it a second. Good morning,
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Jeannie Hadaway Riccio, Secretary of Department of Natural Resources. We have 9 items on our real property agenda today for which we are seeking approval. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
I just want to point out item 4A, program open space. It's the state share going to Baltimore City, $4.5 million. It is going to support 5 rec centers, as well as operating money in the range of $3 million in operating money for city parks, something that is well needed, particularly the rec centers, but also some assistance for the city to maintain their parks. So thank you for working with the city in this particular area.
Thank you.
I have a question in general, Madam Secretary, about PREP. I noticed, for instance, 8A, but how my recollection, and I may be wrong, my recollection from several years ago is that the federal PREP program participants, a lot of them were rolling off or essentially rolling out of PREP, and the question was how we maintain that land. So I'm just curious how we're doing in general. Here's an example of what you all are doing. How are we doing in general?
So I think we're doing very well with this program on the state side. You are correct. At the federal level, there was a timing issue regarding participants who needed to renew their contracts and the federal government processing them in time. Our administration worked with the U.S. Department of Agriculture to make sure that they understood that that was an issue for us, and they have gotten that moving over the summer. But we are continuing conversations with them about trying to make it easier for landowners to access that funding and participate in that program.
We heard from some people who wanted to continue with the state. It's not that
yes.
they didn't want to, but it seemed very difficult because of the feds.
Right.
Thank you.
Sure.
Bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Any more questions on the
Department
of
Justice?
Yeah. Move approval.
Second.
Okay. That was easy. University system.
Good morning, Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have 7 items on the agenda. We are withdrawing item 4CEP, and we're here to answer any questions.
Two things. I want to point out also that you all have now started putting some energy and environment-related language in most of the projects and pointing out that almost all are LEED Silver. Of course, we're now aiming higher than LEED Silver. But that's, I appreciate it because I know it wasn't easy for you to get everybody together to do that. I'm really concerned about, and I understand 4C has been taken off, and I don't have a problem with the project, but the question of cost escalation, which is one that actually Bob Durrell's raised with us in school construction, that they're seeing it very significantly because of competition, not A, commodity prices were going up, but B, also competition for trained workforce. And I just wondered, I saw a number in one of these where the, and I think it was yours, it was going 17%, and then another one 17%.
It was 4 and 6. They withdrawn 4, but number 6 has that.
17 to 37%.
37%, right.
And as I say, it's not just the university.
No, it's like I was saying before, we're hearing it from industry, one of the commercial projects. On state projects, it is a challenge, and it's the workforce. I spoke to the Baltimore Area Building and Management Operators Association yesterday, and that was one of the questions. What can we do to help get more skilled labor out there? And it is a challenge. And one of the – just I'm going to get on my soapbox for a moment. One of the challenges, I turned to the comptroller. one of the challenges is, well, years ago we moved away from quote unquote vocational high schools. And, I remember when, in the old days when I was a kid, we had vocational high schools. And those schools, you could get college prep at the same time you're learning a skill. That's one of the challenges. The other challenge is, I think, many of us as parents, we don't talk to our kids. When our kids are like, I don't know if I want to go to college, we get into this thing of you need to go to college. It's a reflection on us. We don't tell them that. But often the parents push their kids in a direction, and then they go off to college, and they come back with a 0.09 grade point average, and the first year they spent $50,000 or something. And I'm not speaking for experience, but
I'm not sure that's possible.
You take one test and that's it. And so we as parents are also, and I live in Howard County where everyone tries to push their kids to college, and some kids, that's not really what they want to do. And there's peer pressure at school, pressure at home, and we're finding ourselves in a situation where, we're losing that entrepreneurial, as I say, the entrepreneurial class. If you may indulge me for another moment, it reminds me of a story that I heard where a person's air conditioning broke on the hottest day of the year, usually Labor Day or Memorial Day, 4th of July. And they called the air-conditioned person who came out, worked maybe a little more than an hour, gave him a bill for like $700 or something of that nature. And the person said, $700? You've been barely here a little more than an hour. I'm a Harvard-trained lawyer. I don't charge that amount. And he said, well, I didn't charge that amount either when I was a lawyer. So, but, that's kind of the point of all of this, so.
Absolutely. It's just remarking, it is a very dramatic.
It is a challenge. I had an incident yesterday where we had a bid that came in for construction that was way over what our estimate was. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we got to award it and probably start talking, and this labor force and other things.
Right. And it's hitting the nonprofits, too. When I mentioned the intergenerational facility in Dorchester County, talking to Santo down there, he was saying that labor and the commodity price, the cost of steel, has increased their the building cost with regard to the intergenerational facility. And they're a nonprofit, so it makes it a little more difficult for them to do something. So it's kind of the negative side of being basically full employment. So.
By the way, I want to congratulate you on the bioscience building at Shady Grove.
the Audubon College Cross Project.
Yeah, that was a great, please thank them for me, commend them for us. It was a great project.
Just following up on the Lieutenant Governor and the Treasurer, we are being asked today to approve the last bid package for the construction of the new Cole Fieldhouse, as they mentioned. When the university came before the board in October 2015, the total estimated cost for this project was $147.4 million. Today, assuming this bid package is approved, the total overall project estimate, inclusive of the design construction equipment, comes out not to $147.4 million, but to $210 million. Back then, we had a shortage of skilled construction. And in 2016, in 2017, in 2018, we continue to have that. I think the Lieutenant Governor makes an excellent point. But my concern is that we have a difference of almost $63 million in the four-year lifespan of this project. When we approved the project in 2015, we heard explicitly from the university that they personally would bear, and I quote from 2015, quote, from the university system, the responsibility to keep the project within that approved appropriation. That was a responsibility that you guys assumed. Within that approved appropriation. So over the last 4 years, we've been asked to approve bid packages that have significantly increased the final cost of the project. One of them apparently was labs and other classrooms that were added to the Cole Fieldhouse somehow. But today, you're once again asking us to approve a revision of the overall final cost by another $15 million. According to the background materials, the reason for this increase is construction industry issues, unquote, quote, unquote. So I'm going to vote against this unless my colleagues would like to trim this by $15 million. I think that's the consequence of this construction management at risk crazy system of bidding that you have in the university system. And based on the 2015 promise to bear the responsibility of the approved amount that we had back then, and removing the $48.3 million that we voted in 2017 for the classrooms, labs, and academic spaces that went in, that leaves the $15 million that, sure, there are going to be increased construction costs, particularly under the system that you're working, as opposed to a design bid build, which DGS uses. But you guys have got your heels dug in. You just don't, you know, believe that it's adding 15 to 20% for the total cost of the project. And so I object to this adding $15 million because of something that was very well known and has been very well known for years. And so I would just make sure this item is kept apart. And then there's a second item I'm not going to vote for, which is a similar increase of $1.9 million above the contract estimate. I guess this is also for spikes in masonry, drywall, metals, and electrical work.
Which item is that?
Item 3-C. That's a much smaller amount, but I hold the system responsible for these increases, and I think that they should stick to their word that they were going to personally assume the responsibility of keeping the projects under budget.
Mr. Evans?
Okay. As far as the CM process, you know, I've come down to the board, and I've heard Mr. Comptroller, you say that, you know, the CM process adds 15 to 20% on these procurements.
Yeah, and not only that, I can prove it to you because there are construction projects around the state that DGS has done where that is proof certain and positive. So
I would just like to say that we would like to see that, because, you know, when we come down to the board, you constantly tell us that there's this increase. And but we've never seen that comparison where the design bid bill is cheaper than, or the CM process is 20% greater. You know, we've been told that we could be provided information, but we've never gotten it. And if we get that information to look at, that's something that we can actually look at.
I guess the example now is probably the Catonsville courthouse right now.
Thank you. Now,
but I think that the only thing with that, and I haven't gotten an update, there are a number of change orders, if I'm not mistaken, on that. Are you familiar, Nelson?
There were a couple of issues that came up. I think there was some groundborne asbestos issues that we had to deal with, which were unknown at the time when we started to do borings. The materials had some asbestos levels in it. And I believe we had some problems with the window structures that caused some changes. But other than that, it's, as far as I'm aware, it's run pretty much on schedule as a bid.
But don't you use design bid build estimates primarily?
We use design bid build.
Why do you do that?
It's the proven way. We can control our costs. We know it's
thank you.
These guys at the university system, I have a lot of respect for them. But this construction management at risk is unfortunately, something that adds 15 to 20% to the cost of this project simply because of this unnecessary fetish with this design. Method. I know you've brought a couple of projects up recently that I guess are design, bid, build, but we're talking billions of dollars of projects that you have that are fit under this system, and the state does just fine because they control their costs.
Well, I would have to say, and I was at DGS, I think you have to look at the total cost. You have to look at those changes that you had to put in place and then compare it to,
fine,
and not
do
just
that.
The original bid.
I'm happy to do that in
Davisville.
Bring the courthouse up here.
Well,
and there are other projects in Montgomery County.
No, it is a little, and these are different than the courthouse.
And the university system is not the only one that's used in the CM process.
Right.
As I recall, the Statham Authority is using the same process that we are doing for Baltimore City Schools. It's the same process.
Right.
In fact, we're the one that's talking how to do it, the CM process.
And we did CM for the Reginald Lewis Museum.
And we also did it for the Enoch Pratt Library.
Right.
Because of the unknowns that were
CM.
CM at risk.
Right.
Because of the unknowns that were involved with the library in terms of keeping the library open while all the restoration was going on.
But, Mr. Comptroller, we'll be, like I say, if we get the information, we'll be happy to get this information.
Hopefully someday you'll get more than just the information and you'll actually change, because, you know, the proof is in these things. So. With all due respect, I'd like to vote against item 3C and the other item, the Cole Fieldhouse. I'm, you know, with the clear explanation that the university should be assuming the responsibility for these cost overruns.
Yeah, my only concern with 6C is that if there was a promise that was made that the university system would pick up that cost. I mean, I don't think I was at the board at that time, so I don't know. That's my only concern about that.
Yeah, so I'll reform that. I'm going to oppose this because of the $15 million, not the $48.3 million increase that we voted on in 2017. I can't remember how I voted on that, but on the $15 million request for this final bid package, I'm voting no. Happy
well,
to vote
I would
for
like
the
to, I would like to ask that we withdraw 6C for now so we can take a look at that history. And then we can vote on, was it 4C?
No, I'm happy to withdraw my objection on 3C based on the level-headed non-impulsive statement of the lieutenant governor, which I would like to associate myself with, but I continue to be a skeptic about the difference between the university system and DGS. So thank you for withdrawing that. We can look at it, and I'll also provide some information on Catonsville and their other Montgomery County projects that I'm aware of where it's not rocket science. It's just spending the taxpayers' money carefully. I'm happy to share this with you.
All right. So 6C, so are we not voting?
So we, the university withdrew item 4, and at the request of the board, the university is withdrawing item 6. So we have 1, 2, 3, 5, and 7.
Okay. Thank you. Move approval.
Could I just say, I don't necessarily share the comptroller's view that you should not use this method where it's appropriate, but and look forward to also to seeing a cost comparison, if possible, that's relevant for this sort of building. But there is a long history also to the Coalfield House project and preparatory to coming back here. Could you just give us a little memorandum about what the history of the project is and what the issues have been beyond the cost estimate that you lay out in, here in front of us?
Yes, ma'am.
Thanks.
Okay.
I would move approval on
the remainder. Right.
Second.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have a second, and then we'll get transportation. Okay, transportation. I guess the window's coming in.
You're hanging out
there. Good morning, Madam Treasurer, Lieutenant Governor, and Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Pete Ron. I'm Secretary of the Maryland Department of Transportation. MDOT is presenting 21 items today. We are withdrawing 7 RP, leaving 20 items for your consideration. And we'll attempt to answer any questions you may have.
What about that bridge? No. What bridge? I do want to, as often, to commend the Department of Transportation for 4AE, putting that in the Small Business Reserve Program, an architectural and engineering program in the Small Business Reserve Program. At the $1 billion price range threshold, I just want to, thank your procurement staff. This is Transit Administration in terms of what they're doing as far as looking at utilizing small businesses. I do have a question with regard to 5GM. This settlement. And I remember this being a challenge when I first came into office, that I heard about this particular project. There was a challenge with an employee. This is the Kirk Bus project, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
No?
This is not Kirk Bus?
What is this? Bus main? Bus main shop. I'm sorry.
Oh, this is the main shop. This isn't Kirk, because I know that the Kirk was the one that was the problem. Okay.
And we had an issue at Kirk.
But it was the same contractor, was it not? Okay.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Maybe it was the employee had a name that was very similar to.
Would you like to have him come up and
answer that? Explain to me the difference with the Kirk and this project.
Hi there, Kevin Quinn, MDOT MTA Administrator, and
Thank you for having me. This settlement is with Schlosser. It's at our main shop. It's our main bus division over Washington Boulevard off Monroe Street, which is different from our Kirk facility, which is up in sort of East Baltimore above Kirk Avenue.
Okay. Okay. So this wasn't the same. But, and this is a settlement having to do with a, I guess, some delays and other challenges with regard to the project.
Yes, that's correct, Lieutenant Governor. Ian Fallon here, Assistant Attorney General of the Contract Litigation Unit. I worked on this matter, this bus main project. There were approximately 35 claims that the general contractor, William M. Schlosser Company, had presented, and then as well there was 59 pass-through claims that a veteran-owned MBE electrical subcontractor had presented. So we were able to work through those, but the state, and specifically the MTA, definitely had exposure on these claims. We attended a mediation with an experienced construction litigator, and we were able to work it out, and I think a settlement that is very favorable to the state.
Okay. Let me ask you then separately, has Kirk been resolved, the issues around the Kirk project?
In terms of the Kirk Phase 1, that came before this board last year in June, and this board approved the settlement, and I was also involved with the litigation surrounding that project. To the extent that you're discussing an employee matter, I was not involved with that. That's only because it's, I deal with construction stuff. I don't deal with employee personnel matters.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Sorry for the confusion on that.
Could I ask a question?
Yes.
Item 7 is a request to approve extensions of temporary construction easements located along the CSX corridor in Silver Spring for the construction of the Purple Line.
So that was withdrawn.
Oh, good.
Anyway.
I mean, I'm not sure. I just want to make sure the Purple Line is on, is more or less on schedule, because
we are. Excuse me, I have a cough drop that's stuck back there.
And what about the bridge?
No. I was saving that for the bridge. yes, I mean we are in direct negotiations with the contractors to get everything with new set targets. The targets we've announced are that it will be a phased opening with 5 miles opening in December of 2022 and the remainder opening in June of 2023. And we are, to date, I believe those are realistic dates to be achieved.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
CSX seems to be charging a lot for this usage. They just have us over a barrel, I guess.
They're a railroad.
It's called a railroad, right? Okay. All right. Any more questions on transportation?
Lieutenant Governor, since you did just say the bridge, I thought I'd have a couple of numbers here that you might find interesting.
Oh,
and
sure.
That is that on the bridge, the mechanical milling of it, 99% of that is complete. Of the hydro demolition, the hydroblasting, we are at 89% of that. And of actual new pavement placed, we have 5,673 feet of it. That represents 45% of the pavement is down. So we're making progress, and we are taking advantage of any temperature.
I think next several days it'll be above freezing. So,
and we're taking
above 45 degrees. I think that's where you can't. 45 degrees is that.
45 and rising.
Right. Okay. Very good. Any other transportation questions?
Move approval.
All right, we're all in favor. The Department of General Services.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Nelson Riker, Deputy Secretary of the Department of General Services. The department is presenting 38 items, including two supplemental items, 37 IT and 38 LT mod. At this time, the Department of General Services, OSP, is withdrawing item 34LT. DGS is verbally amending item 23C. DGS asked for approval by the board to demolish the buildings per the state clearinghouse procedures, and then a construction contract to conduct the demolition.
Which is that? I'm sorry.
Which one was that?
Item 23C is a contract to demolish buildings in an oversight. The clearinghouse process and approval was not wasn't previously presented to the board, that they have approved the demolition through the clearinghouse process. So we're asking the board to approve the demolition, the demolition of the building as a state building, and then the demolition contract to do the demolition.
Is that okay?
As we all turn to
yes, when this happens, and the an agency, and there are other agencies besides Department of General Services that might overlook it, there is supposed to come and ask for permission to change the use of the building, which is the demolition. And then they can go forward with procuring a contractor to accomplish the demolition. But when we've seen these presented as procurements in front of the board before, we've confirmed they have presented us the materials from the clearinghouse, that the clearinghouse does recommend it. And so then we make it a two-part item. And I believe we have done that with public safety last summer when they demolished the downtown facilities. So anyway, and we will put corrected in the record, but they would like to add permission to demolish. And by the way, we have the procurement contractor all lined up.
So all this will be
reflected. It is okay. But I appreciate Mr. Riker putting that on the record, because technically you are supposed to approve the demolition according to the clearinghouse process, but we do have that now. So thank you.
Okay. John, you listening to all this? Okay, thank you. Number one, CGL, and this is a grant to the American Legion Post number 77. I'm going to turn to Secretary Riccio. Is this the post that's right there in Easton, Mr. Black and his group?
Okay. Yes, sir.
All right. I had visited this location, and it's a very historic Legion Post. An African-American post, and it goes back many, many years. And glad to see that they were able to get some assistance as they rebuild and expand the post and make it much more of a community project. So it's good to see that it's made it this far.
Could I, Nelson, I guess, my understanding here is that the grants manual, which is what you send out to all the community organizations.
Right. We also have outreach programs to ask people, offer people the ability to come in to understand how to do a grant, and then we have a grants manual that gives them directions on how to prepare.
Are there provisions relating to energy efficiency and environmental impact in it?
I don't believe that there are at this point, but I will have to get back to you.
Can you get back to us on that? Because
sure.
I was told, in fact, that something had been added, but I haven't actually. No, I want to see the man.
Okay, I will check on it. If we had said we would do it, then we'd done it.
I think it would be a really good thing to
do.
Obviously.
So, Shirley Kennedy is here from...
Good morning. I'm Shirley Kennedy. I'm the director of the Capital Grants Program. And, yes, there is. There are stipulations in the grant manual that has been updated, and it addresses green technology. It addresses the entire green program and the policies and requirements, the state policies and requirements.
Can we see a copy of the manual?
Yes, I can get that.
I had heard that it had been updated, and
yeah,
I congratulate you.
It was updated as a result of a wonderful work group that we had. And at the end of July, everything was approved. We had a work group with the Comptroller's Office, Treasurer's Office, Board of Public Works, Department of Legislative Services. Everyone participated in the work group, and so it was recently updated.
Great. I think we should see it and maybe hear a little more about it so that all the groups throughout the state
know about it. In addition to that, we have workshops that are conducted on a monthly basis. It's demystifying the capital grants process. And our last workshop was just last Thursday, and they've been very well attended by grant recipients, legislators.
I would say, do you advise the legislators about
yes.
this, about the manual and
yes.
about these requirements? Because I
yes.
know they hear from their constituents. It would be good.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Nelson, when you don't know, just say you don't know.
Yeah.
Right? Don't
I'll
guess.
Find it out for
right.
I have a question about 20, the post office. And this, I have no issue with this.
It is an ongoing.
It was divided into two parts, I read here. The project that is
And Lauren Buckler.
Sequential. Good morning.
Good morning.
Am I right that it was?
Yes. You're correct.
How much did that add to the cost? You have any?
We don't have an exact number because we don't have the full number prior to it being split. We had to start splitting the project after we were into design. So it did add cost to the design process, and that's the item you're seeing before you because the designer had to do additional work that wasn't in their original scope. To make two packages of design documents for us to bid with.
And then in the project itself, will there be any cost impact of dividing it into?
There's some cost impact, less so there. The cost impact there is going to be escalation because there's additional
right.
time.
Well, and we're hearing all of them.
There's additional overhead. Now you've got two different contractors that were involved with their overhead to come into the site. But both were design, bid, build. Projects, not CM at risk.
Right.
But we can get you an estimate of what we think that would have been the overhead and the escalation.
I remember one time years ago when, in fact, a decision was made that when some people in the legislature who wanted to have projects in their district sought to increase the amount by spreading out the construction time, essentially. So you'd need less money in each annual budget. And the decision then was not to do that, except where absolutely necessary for other reasons, because it added to the cost in the long run. But I suppose that depends on the market at any particular time. Is there a policy?
Typically, we don't spread stuff out like this. This particular project, the funding ended up being split like this. There's so much money. There's so many projects
behind
their funds. So this ended up being part of that situation. Typically, our projects are funded over multiple years, but usually we're pre-authorized, so we can award the full amount before the board to a single contractor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. I just wondered. It would be interesting if you had any ballpark.
We can put together something and get back to you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Yep. A lot of changes. For CGL, the detox facility in Frederick County. I know this is something that had been discussed. I know Sheriff Jenkins wanted to do this and am glad to see that they've been able to work together with the county to get this facility moving. They're going to use a facility that one of the sheriff's facilities that he had to use as a detox facility that was needed in Frederick County. And so it's a good start. I know that there was a lot of work that was done at the county level between the county executive and the council as well as the sheriff to get this moving, and glad to see that it is moving along. So I just wanted to point that one out as well. Another capital grant, Lexington Market and the zoo. The Maryland Zoo is getting a non-match of $5 million. They do a lot of good work up there, and I'm glad to see that, as well as the non-matching grant for the redesign of Lexington Market. There's a lot of work that could be done there, as well as the area around. I do want to commend Juvenile Services on 26S. The work that they've done, this bid for the community-based behavioral health evaluation for referred youth. The awards of the contracts, regional contracts, the new Eastern Regional recipient is a certified MBE that won this in a full and open competition. I do have a question with regard to the Southern Region to make sure that the winner can actually do the work. Is anyone here from Juvenile Services that can answer those questions?
Yes. Jane Cleary, Chief of Staff here on behalf of Secretary of Ed. Thank you for your question, Lieutenant Governor. Yes, we feel confident that the winning bid, the Center for Children, can manage those duties. I would note that the Southern Region encompasses Southern Maryland, so that does include Calvert and Charles County, and they are based out of La Plata, and I think that is part of what gave them a competitive advantage.
Okay. When I saw their number was substantially different from the second place as well as the other regional folks, I was a little concerned about that.
Since you're there, could I just ask, how is the move to Redwood Tower going?
It's going as planned. We're right on schedule, and we're hoping, we're looking to be moving by mid-December.
Mid-December?
Yes.
Governor, I couldn't let 11...
Zoo. I said it kind of fast.
Go by. First of all, it's the Maryland Zoo.
Yes.
And I wish more folks throughout Maryland realized that. It's a wonderful zoo.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons it's wonderful is its leader, Don Hutchison, who's retiring.
Yes, that's right.
Which
that's right.
I find amazing. When I first came here and worked in the General Assembly, Don was on the House Committee on Constitution and Administrative Law before he went to the Senate. And he has been a great benefactor of the state in the public, private, and nonprofit sector. He's been a great leader. I know there will be opportunities to honor him and to cite him, but I couldn't let this go by. As I recall, it was only about 10 or 12 years ago, the zoo looked like it was really in terribly bad shape, and there was actually discussion about closing it down. And they brought Don in for a year or two, I think, to see what he could do from the Greater Baltimore Committee, to see what he could do to help turn it around. So he was there for at least a decade, and it is in much better shape, although a zoo is a terribly expensive enterprise, just like an aquarium. But I just wanted to say this great.
Well, he's
project.
Here. Why don't we bring him up? Mr. Hutchison?
I didn't see him.
Yeah.
No, I would have been much more fulsome. And
Thank you so much. Thank you for the I was going to contradict you and say you've been here longer than anybody but Barry. I know. That's almost the truth. I was looking at this these photos. I started my career here. I actually testified in this room as a college student when Miller Taws was sitting where you were sitting, and I was involved in student government back at Frostburg State College, now Frostburg University. I got a hell of a lot smarter when it became a university as a result. Thank you very much, Lieutenant Governor, for your comments, Controller, for the show, and Treasurer. You've been such a good friend for so many years, and we have a very, very close relationship in our life. Someone in between us who was a great friend of mine, a great friend of Treasurer.
Helen Goss. First woman chair of a regular standing committee in the House of Delegates.
She was a terrific legislator. First of all, I want to thank Ms. McDonald. She has been a terrific partner. I'm not coordinating my retirement from the zoo with her retirement, although you might say
that's
a natural decision we made. But I'm here mostly to say thanks to you as members of the Board of Public Works and to Governor Hogan for the strong support that you've given the zoo. The treasurer is correct. When I was asked to come in, this was supposed to be a 15 to 30 month responsibility, and that was 12 years ago. It turned out the zoo was in terrible shape. I was asked to come in. I was president, had been president of SunTrust Bank, and I was asked to come in to see if there was a way to pull it all together. We've been able to do that, but we would not have been able to do it without the capital investment by the state of Maryland. I mean, that's the fundamental basis for our success, and that is that the infrastructure had fallen apart in a very, very significant way at the zoo, and the zoo had absolutely no financial wherewithal to make those improvements at all. And it was because of the governors, it was because of the legislature, mm-hmm. and it was because of the Board of Public Works that was so engaged in our work. And the reason I have so much respect for what has come out of the governmental process is that there's a recognition that what zoos do around the country is to save animals from extinction. That's literally what the accredited zoos in the country do. The animals that are in accredited zoos around the country are going to be virtually extinct in the next 50 to 100 years in the wild, unless there are major interventions made right now. And that has been a critical role for us and something that we really understand as our primary mission, to save animals from extinction. The other thing that's important is that the zoo lives off of what it makes every day, and the two primary sources of revenue for capital, the single source, almost single source for capital investment is the state of Maryland. It's not the sole source, but almost. But on the operational side, we spend around $15 to $16 million a year. It costs about $50,000 a day to operate the zoo. It doesn't matter if one person walks in the door or 10,000 people walk in the door. And there are times when that literally happens, where in the same week we'll have 7,000 to 8,000 people one day, and we'll have 100 people in the next day because of the weather. And there's this recognition that we live off of what we get on a daily basis. We have no endowment. We have no reserve fund. So the state support is critical to that. It gives us a foundation money on the operational side and our greatest share of money on the capital side. And I'm just here to say thank you so much. Thank you for the acknowledgement. I came down here as the youngest member of Maryland's Constitutional Convention in 1967. That's when I started. And I'm finishing a career in the same room that I started.
Thank you. Very good. Thank you. Thank you for calling him up.
I didn't realize that you were there. Now I've got to go back and check my remarks.
You were nice. I remember visiting, I guess it was in the summer. Yes, it was, because it was around the time of the World Cup. Face things from soccer. That the opening of the elephant exhibit. So it was wonderful, and I encourage people to go to see that as well. One last thing on general services. 27S mod. I just bring that up mainly from the standpoint that we're extending the Brinks contract, formerly Dunbar, because we're moving a lot more to, this is with MDTA, we're moving a lot more towards the tollless facilities, so you don't need as many Brinks trucks. Mr. Serbo, I guess you're coming up.
Mr. John Emanuel, Chief Operations. So, yes, we are.
Identify yourself. I know who you are, but...
Sorry. Donna Serbo, Director of Procurement for the Maryland Transportation Authority. Good morning, everyone. But I will turn this over to Donna.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. John O'Neill, Chief Operating Officer with the Maryland Transportation Authority.
I was noticing that you're going, the extension and looking at procuring a new contract. I would imagine the contract is going to be very different because of the fact that there's not as much cash that's going to have to move at this point.
That is correct. We're reducing our cash. Of course, we just converted over the Haydom and the Key Bridges to cashless tolling. But we still require the armored car services until we convert all of our facilities. We are still collecting about 20% cash system-wide. And we have our customer service centers that are located around the state at our facilities and at a few MVA branches. And we're expanding those locations to branches in Waldorf, Dundalk, and Annapolis very shortly. So we still need the cash pickups for armor car for that as well.
Okay. Any questions with regard to that?
No.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a question. If item 12, this is a $2 million capital grant loan to the Meriwether Post Pavilion for critically important upgrades to their facility. Everyone knows how important Meriwether is to the region's, it's a concert venue, but it's a very important economic generator for Howard County and also for the state of Maryland. It's my understanding that Ian Kennedy and Gene Parker and Brad Canfield may be here. I saw my good friend Tom Cole, who helps Meriwether, if perhaps they could come up and tell us what the funding is going to be utilized for.
Thank you, Mr. Comptroller, Lieutenant Governor, and Madam Treasurer. My name is Ian Kennedy. I am the Executive Director of the Downtown Columbia Arts and Culture Commission. We are the nonprofit organization that owns Meriwether. And I am happy to say we are in the home stretch of the renovations here at Meriwether. It's been since 2014, 2015 that we started. We've gone from concerts all summer, construction all winter, concerts all summer, and it's been quite a merry-go-round. But we are, as I said, we are beginning phase five, which is the final phase of construction. We just finished phase 4B, which included these brand new sky lawns, which some folks might have heard about. It's one of a kind feature, and no other venue has that. What we're looking to do with phase five is to finish out the fan services areas, the concession plaza, new bathrooms that will serve the lawn exclusively, and you know the lawn is the biggest area of attendance at the venue. But critically, we'll also make the entire venue accessible for people with mobility challenges. From if you've ever been to Meriwether, I think most of you have. You know, it's built in a hill, a natural amphitheater, but it is a very hilly property. And this will allow folks to get all the way from the top of the venue to the bottom of the venue with just one small outdoor elevator. But aside from that, this will help us re-level and regrade the property to make it more accessible to more people.
Terrific. I'm a big fan of yours. Anyone else want to say something?
Other than thank you very much. I was listening to what you had to say about the zoo, and we were in a very similar situation. So we, from our hearts, we are very sincerely thankful for the funding that you all have given us since 2014. And like I tell everybody, we're not going to come back for another 50 years.
Writing that down.
Give me that with the date, today's date. Tom, do you want to say a word? I appreciate all the community activity that you represent and your philanthropy. So I'm not sure what your role is here.
Today I just carry the bags. I'm just here in support of the Downtown Columbia Arts and Cultural Commission and IMA, and certainly appreciate everything that you support. Meriwether supports the community, so it's completely reciprocal.
It's very interesting that this last phase, I knew of a lot of people several decades ago who were running up and down and lying on the green and doing all sorts of things, who now will be very appreciative.
A little easier
thank
to
you.
Move around.
Thank you.
Oh, very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other questions from General Services?
Move approval. With
second.
All right. I think we're in favor. Done. Thank you very much.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Yeah, it is next week.
Yeah. Wow.